We are back for our final joint session with the Citizen Board, and we are now with the Zoning Hearing Board. Two members are here, and I will have them introduce themselves and turn the floor over to them. Thank you.
I'm Jonathan Garzillo, a member of Zoning Hearing Board.
Mark Sedroga, Zoning Officer.
And Mark's got some of the stats up there, the list. We did six. I'll start with a little bit of brief and unfortunate. Probably the biggest event of 2023 is that we lost one of our board members, had a shoebox. So that was a sudden and tragic thing for our board. And we'll go over the statistics real quickly. We had 16 applications. Breaking them down, 14 of them were variances, two of them were special exceptions. Of the two special exceptions, one was approved, one was denied. Both of them were daycares. Of the variances, you can subdivide them out into dimensional and use. Looks like of the 11, 8 were dimensional, 3 were use. Of the dimensional, looks like 5 were approved and 3 were denied, about 62%. Of the use, 1 was approved and 2 were denied. The only use variance that was approved, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mrs. Droga, it was the Porsche application.
That's correct.
At the mall. An unusual thing for a use variance, it was parking spots to sell, not even sell cars, just test drive. So the point being with all these statistics, essentially, even with our approvals and our denials, the pattern that it fits is that we may be approving dimensional variances, but use variances are something that we approve extremely rarely. Essentially, keeping consistent with what we believe to be the Board of Supervisors' wishes. You set the code, we don't write it, we enforce it. So you will see consistently some approvals for dimensional variances, but really, again, extremely rarely for any kind of use variance approvals. The one we approved the whole year, it was a bit of an unusual situation.
The only thing I'll add, Anne, is that 0 appeals were filed also with the 6 denials.
Which means we remain undefeated on appeal for quite a while.
Congratulations.
Well, you have one of the best solicitors in the country.
One of. Certainly the best in the area, Mark Jonas. Which is my next point. I want to thank the two Marks, as always, for their service. Mark Sedroga, who has been phenomenal as a liaison to us.
Thank you.
Extremely helpful. He is quick with information. He gets back to us as fast as possible. He provides all the information that we need, and we would in no way be able to do our job as well as we can without Mr. Sedroga. And of course, Mr. Jonas, our solicitor, who is by his peers considered one of the best, if not the best, in the area, and his contribution is also phenomenal, as evident, obviously, in our undefeated status on appeal. We would like to make a couple points, since this is our moment to do so, about some questions and subjections we have from members of our board. One, I think we even have discussed this before, the Lockheed question. We have a defense contractor in town, okay, certainly a long-standing and valuable member of our community. But when we run into zoning issues and applications from them, there is an issue of national security and what we are and are not allowed to know. Our board has traditionally acted under the assumption that Lockheed's a bit of a black box for us. So if they say we need a building X height above the zoning, and we ask them what they're doing in it, and they say we can't tell you, we accept that as a given, of course, in the interest of national security. As a board, we would like to know from a legal point of view exactly what the extent is of our limitations as far as what we are or are not permitted and should be asking. To what extent are they a special member of our community, which we recognize, obviously, being a part of national security or national defense, and to what extent are they like anybody else that we, there are certain things that we can ask. So we've discussed this in the past and we're bringing up again. We would like at some point some type of an official clarification in what are the limits of the applications from not just Lockheed, but any current or future defense contractor that would be protected under a National Security Act or something along those lines. Vivian Pekin brought up that point. I think it's an excellent point and certainly one that I think needs to be addressed. The other issue at hand that we have, apparently you are reworking the application for our board, which certainly is an excellent idea and an excellent project. We would very much like an opportunity to red pen that a bit, since it is to our board and it is designed, one, to be consistent with the municipality's planning code, but also to make our jobs the most efficient and accurate and correct, and also to avoid having to send Mr. Sedroga off on re-asking for information.
So just so you know, that came at the request of Mr. Jonas. So Mr. Hamaday, I think, is revamping it.
Mark and his staff put it together, did the changes. So it'll be going to, and I apologize for sitting back here, but it'll go back to Mark and he'll distribute it to the ZHP members.
Very good.
For your input as well.
Excellent.
So we think we've covered all the bases that Mr. Jonas had brought up some issues with.
And we certainly hope that if we have suggestions on that, that they'll be considered, given the fact that we obviously are the board the application is for.
It makes most sense to me for you as the ZHB members and you as the zoning officer to design, if you need a better form, it makes most sense for you guys to design it. And then do we then have to okay it or no?
No, it's their fault.
Okay, well, good. Yeah. Then,
other than it obviously has to conform to the MPC with the regulations, but
okay.
Yeah, beyond that.
Okay, so you don't need input from us on that?
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, we need us to have input on it.
Thanks for doing it. Okay.
I think obviously the information that Mr. Sedroga put together was very helpful in me just summarizing all of that. So
I just left up the attendance, so you guys know who showed up when. Because we had 11 meetings, total of 11 meetings.
Who's been tardy?
I'm sorry, so, no, M and Shiragi, they got perfect attendance. So.
Perfect attendance? All of them?
No, not all of them, just M and Shiragi.
Just came for star. I want a star.
A star? Gold star sticker. Give him a sticker.
Otherwise, I'd be home watching the draft, so it came for my sticker.
Participation
next
counts.
Next meeting.
We'll buy you a drink next meeting.
Excellent. Speaking of Shiragi, she was our alternate with the passing of Ms. Schumach. She was elevated to a voting board member, a permanent board member, which leaves us, obviously, with no alternate.
Okay.
There are vacancies in other boards. We certainly understand that. One of the issues, obviously, with our board is that, you know, because our decisions are, one, legally binding, and two, they can be continued if we lack a certain number of board members. While I understand there are vacancies in all of the boards, our board is particularly critical as far as needing a full complement, because it can create issues, time lags, we're on the clock, we have legal aspects of the nature of our board, that making sure we have a full legal complement is a bit critical for us. Now, we went for years without an alternate at all, which I understand, mm-hmm. but now that we've had one for a certain number of years and now we're back to not having one, it would be handy if we had
it. Do we have any?
We currently don't have any in the pipeline, so there's no applications that are pending. We haven't had anyone send in an application, so maybe
you can't create an application anymore.
We do announce that at every business meeting. So our monthly open to the public meetings, we do make that announcement at the beginning of the meeting to let people know what is open.
It's also on our website.
But
for the public, the reason why this is so critical is because if there are only four members sitting, if there is a 2-2 tie, then the application is denied.
It's denied.
Okay. What most people, I think, don't really understand about the zoning board is that it's almost like the five of them wear black robes. That's really their function. It's quasi-judicial. And so when M says that their decisions are legally binding, they are. Mm-hmm. They interpret our code, and like any good judges, mm-hmm. and they do a really, really good job.
Thank you.
You know, they have a really good solicitor. They all have experience with this, and they do a very good job for our citizens. And so if they don't, you know, grant use variances, it's a very high bar, you know, so there's five criteria you got to meet. And if you can't meet them, you're not going to get what you asked for. So
our role, to reiterate, is to adjudicate the wishes of your board, not to set our own zoning code. As you well know, your board has the opportunity to weigh in, and as always, you are, by statutory right, of a party to all of our hearings. I know that Mr. Phillips has been doing an excellent job of letting all of you know every hearing that's coming before us. And just to remind you, always have the opportunity, even if simply by letter, to express your official wishes, because you are a party to every hearing. And you have a legal right to, if you do have specific wishes about an application, because again, we're adjudicating your wishes. So if there's a specific variation from the typical of the code that your board has on a given application, we not just welcome, but by design, we expect those wishes to be expressed in one way or another. It doesn't mean to send your solicitor, but even a letter, you know, lets us know where you stand on a particular application, again, as the MPC permits.
We've done that from time to time over the years, but pretty rarely, I would say. It's just when we decide that it's something where we do want to take a stand, pro or con, an application. But it's pretty rare, I think, that we do that.
And honestly, it should be.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why we appointed the five to actually do the interpretation for us.
I have one question. When you mentioned about clarifying the situation with somebody like who's a defense contractor, who would help us clarify that? Would it be Mark Jonas, or would it be our township solicitor?
We would need to find out if they are basically throwing the DHS card out. If the DHS is part of that process that they are using or doing this for, the DHS has comprehensive protocols or requirements that impact planning and zoning.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to play the card to get that implemented, is my understanding.
Yeah, you proceed with the assumption that it's being played, which perhaps is not the best way to approach that historically, but it would be helpful if we had some kind of guidance from Homeland Security or anybody representing them.
There actually is a book like this thick.
If you have it with you, I can read it right now.
I don't.
We don't have the time.
But it is a comprehensive manual on planning and zoning and stormwater. It's got all that stuff in there, but it's what a DHS site would have privilege or no privileges, so to speak.
Well, and I think there's...
Maybe use the wrong term.
There may be some case law out there. I mean, Mr. Jonas, as well as our solicitor. And I'm sure there are other experts in the field for that, federal.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing we do know is that there is national security stuff going on there. I mean,
But we've always known that.
Yeah, we've always known that. There's a black box site. My brother used to work there. There was the white side and the black side.
Mm-hmm.
Black side seems to be the issue that has remained all these years, where the white side has sort of gone off to other places. But it probably would behoove us to kind of see how we deal with that and maybe give the board some guidance or codify it ourselves.
So how do we go about doing that?
Well, I can certainly talk with Mr. Jonas. I can certainly talk with Mr. Walco.
Okay.
See where we start.
Okay.
And then if he can bring in his
book,
50-pound book, it might be helpful.
Big paperweight.
It's a big paperweight.
Okay.
Board have any questions for us?
I asked my question.
I think it's always helpful, and I remember us having this conversation last year that we talked about trends, just for us guiding ordinances that we're working on, how to implement them. So it's always helpful to see trends that are happening out in the community. What are people asking for? What are needs? What are special situations that come up that we may not always hear about at our level, but things that come in front of you? So I think it always is interesting just to know patterns that are happening out there. So keeping us apprised to nuances of sheds. That's just a typical, someone wants to put a shed and they want to put it within a setback and just trends that are happening. And I know there's also a second thing is that I know there have been discussions about what to expect with applications coming in. Mm-hmm. So maybe some guidelines from the board, the ZHB board, with what you guys are expecting to see and to understand when you before you need to make an approval. So if you need to see something, so documentation that comes in that maybe is not complete, is there something has to be revised for you to know how to make the correct decision? So that kind of feedback, I think, would be helpful, too, just to, mostly to guide your decision-making. But
Well, I was going to suggest that maybe one of the good ways is, because one of the things that I think the board feels is a lot of folks that come before them are our residents, but they're for that shed, and they don't really understand the process or why they're there. Maybe if with Don's help, we could actually do maybe a PSA with a board member or two, maybe even Mr. Jones, to just as you know, a 15-minute spot just to talk about this is what happens in the zoning, this is what an application is, and here's what you can expect, and here's what you should bring to the zoning board. It would make their lives easier because the meetings would be way more efficient.
For them to understand the process. So prior to doing their application, they could be directed to, for your edification, watch this video. It'll walk you through the process. Yeah. And I like that suggestion, Greg.
And to your point, and thank you for making the point about what our board is expecting as far as information. I think that conversation and the retooling and red penning of the application conversation is the same conversation. I think us getting a chance to weigh in on that application is also the moment in the process where we get to weigh in on what we're looking for in these processes, what keeps it from being kicked back and coming back again. And I think Mr. Zdroga obviously would be a part of that conversation as well. So I think what we very much often overlook is getting his department's input on that process as well. But yes, no, I agree 100%. That's where that can be done. And as far as the trends, one of the trends that remains the same is commercial signs. I'm not necessarily weighing in on whether that code should be altered, but as far as what do we see, especially lately, we see a lot of dimensional variance requests for commercial signs. Mm-hmm. Now, from our point of view, again, to reiterate that...
You're saying signs, S-I-G-N-S, signs,
yes.
Okay.
To reiterate that, it's not our job just to make code, it's our job to defend the code. If we feel that if the supervisors don't want signs on every side of the building, we're not going to override that. If you feel that you want to alter your code, then obviously we'll enforce whatever the alterations are. But that's what we see a lot. And as you well know, one of the issues that we've seen is signs inside a building that are not classified as signs, and that remains a part of our code and a part that we have to enforce. The code as it's written, but signs is a big issue. You know, people with their sheds a couple of feet closer to their neighbors. You see that a bit from time to time, but that tends not to be the confrontational issue. Daycares, both of our special exceptions were daycares. Mm-hmm. One was a relatively small number of students, well within the special exception boundaries, and it was approved. One was a significantly higher number to the point where it was a commercial application, essentially, and it was not approved. But we see daycares a lot as far as special exception and chickens.
Chickens. What is
do you,
it? Oh,
do you say yes to the chickens usually or no to the chickens?
Chicken. Chicken. Special exceptions, obviously, as you well know, is a lower threshold. And if somebody meets the definition of a special exception, it's a by right application. So historically, farm animals, which is the classification, we have, I think, our pattern has been to approve them.
Yes.
Yeah, because we're staying consistent with the nature and spirit of a special exception.
Rooster.
Yeah. What about rooster? Yeah, exactly. I was going to ask, what about roosters?
No roosters.
No roosters, just chickens.
Just chickens.
And so, okay.
Just chickens.
Just chickens. Okay. Mm. So.
Do you see glitches more in the ordinance itself, or do you see more glitches, maybe this is too broad of a question, in definitions that you, or definitions where some issues come up that maybe we don't define things clearly enough or have?
A lack of definitions.
A lack of definitions.
Without question, a lack of definitions. It's an excellent point. It's the part of the code that people tend not to think of as being a deficit, because you read the code and you don't notice what's not in there. But what's not in there is there's no definition of this or there's no definition of that. So when our board runs into that, we have to fall back on what the law tells us, which is either a dictionary definition or, in case of a tie, it goes to the applicant. So if the code does not clearly define something, it leaves us in a position where we have a more difficult time adjudicating other than just simply approving, because there's no clear definition. So yes, absolutely. A lack of a definition is an issue. And there's some glitches in the code. There'll always be glitches in the code. There are some specific glitches, obviously, that we've discussed. But for the most part, definitions are definitely a big issue, and a lack of definitions.
Lack of definition. Okay, maybe we can pay more attention to that while we're working on our ordinance revisions.
Yes.
Make sure that we're hitting all those, the key words that are within the code. Make sure.
Thoughts on that?
No, I agree. Definitions would be helpful, right? So
part of the problem with definitions is that the terms keep changing.
They do.
And as we get further along in construction and stormwater management and all those types of things, there's new definitions that keep coming up. And how you define something, you know, I can think of a code that defines a mixed-use building. Can't have grocery store in it, because you can pick from column A, column B, column C, but even though a grocery store is defined and allowed, it doesn't meet that definition for mixed use. So it's kind of takes some work.
Have you gotten any requests for accessory dwellings? I'm reading about them a lot.
Interestingly
There's
enough.
A new definition, by the way.
Oh.
We have, Carol. We
yeah.
have.
Yeah.
Like two or three,
mm-hmm.
but they want to build an accessory dwelling
mm-hmm.
on that same lot.
Or an in-law or something, a family member or...
Either or.
In the building. Do you mean in that? In the
no, an accessory normal? Building.
Accessory
yeah.
Accessory
yeah.
building.
A tiny house, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Has that come up?
Not so much the term tiny house, but accessory building or accessory dwelling has, and yeah. But when I think I kind of, you know, when I talk to the applicant or potential applicant, I think they kind of then shy away from trying to put, I'll say a second house on the same lot.
Right. That raises a good point, certainly, that Mr. Zdroga has a better idea of what's being asked than we do, because a lot of things that are being asked don't get appealed to us.
Mm-hmm.
So he's seeing more than we are. We're only seeing who writes a check to go to the next level.
Yeah.
So he would by far be the best source of what isn't even making it past that point.
Okay.
It's just interesting that you said that. I probably had two or three calls in the last month on accessory.
Just recently.
Dwellings, accessory structures.
Yeah. I must be reading that house bill.
Have you seen the House and Senate bills regarding this?
Accessory the
word. I have accessory dwellings. We'll make sure you get a copy.
In Pennsylvania.
Yes.
For Pennsylvania.
For Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Okay. Anything in addition?
No.
Well, thank you for that reporting and for attending this evening. Appreciate it. Appreciate your service. And
thank you.
Thank you for your decisions and for all the work that you put into it.
Thank you for your
to
support.
You and
over
all
the, years.
The rest of the board. Thank you.
Well, that concludes the last the last joint session with a citizen board for this evening. Now we will go into additional business by the board. Is there anything in addition that anyone would like to share?
No.
Anything from the public? Hearing
and seeing. Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Our meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everyone, for being with us this evening. We are adjourned.